This podcast is intended for educational purposes only and is not medical or legal advice. Always follow your local policies, procedures, and protocols when functioning in your respective profession. Additionally, the views expressed by the speakers and owners of this podcast are their own and do not represent the views of their respective employers. Listener discretion is advised.
Alert Medic 1, respond.
Ken, Josh, and Mustafa here. Welcome back to the Alert Medic 1 podcast.
Oh, and we're recording. Sweet. Cool. What's up, guys? How are we doing?
What's up?
So today's topic, kind of exciting because I've done zero research into this, and Cody's done two and a half pages worth of research. So I guess you're going to be doing the heavy lifting here today, buddy. And Ken said he didn't get a chance to read either. So we're, this is the group project where you do all the actual work. So I'll hand it off
to you. Share the grade?
Yeah, exactly.
We share the grade.
So what's today's topic, Cody?
So today's topic is on mindset traps, or these little potholes that we tend to run over the course of our career, whether you're on the fire truck or in an ambulance, whatever. And these are what I believe is a big source of just kind of what robs us of our love of the job. You know, when you're this is what you're thinking about when you're thinking about, I don't want to do this anymore. Or just, fuck this job. I'm so sick of it. I'm so tired of it. And I really don't believe 100% of the cases that we're really tired of the job, or we hate our company, or we hate, you know, we're tired of responding to people's homes when they need us. Really? We're sick of this. So I did some just kind of reflection on my own. I listened to so Scott Weingart's got a new podcast out there, right? It's the On Deeper Reflection. He calls it the Odor Podcast. It's On Deeper Reflection. It's kind of like, it's way off the beaten path from his medical stuff. It's a lot of philosophical type of things. And so I'm listening to, and I forget which episode it was now, but it was about taking back your agency, or your sense of self and your sense of control. And, you know, so it just became kind of a writing prompt or a journaling prompt for me. And that's kind of where these two pages came from that we're going to kind of work through. So there's really two parts to this when you're evaluating your mindset traps. And the first part of it is truly an evaluation of you, your life. What are you doing with it? What are you doing with your time? What are you doing with your job? What are you doing with your career? And we make certain agreements. Excuse me for one second here. I think I'm fighting off a little bit of the vid here. But we make certain agreements when we're going through our day or going about our lives of, this is the way it is. And we go, yeah, that's the way it is. You know, it's either our ego sitting on one shoulder going, yeah, that's right, you do deserve it. Or it's the, I don't know, some other part of our psyche that's going, nah, is it really? So that's the first part of it. So the second part of it is truly things that I have said to myself about the job, or conversations that I've had with my partners and counterparts, either throughout the industry or while we're sitting in the front of a truck in a gas station, you know, the good old system status management stuff. But these are conversations that we had, and these were what I'm hoping to do is, if maybe, you know, maybe you're listening to this and you're on your way to work and you're having that conversation of, I'm turning around at the next bridge and I'm just going to go home today. I'm not dealing with it. So maybe there's a way, maybe there's something in here that we can help you reframe whatever that trap that you're stuck in. And maybe we can get, maybe you can ride that wave for 6, 7, 8 more months, and then, you know, come back to this episode to listen to another part, and then ride that wave again, and then find a way to do this for yourself. So that's kind of where it all started, Moose.
No, that's really interesting. I can't help but think of the movie Bringing Out the Dead.
Love it.
By Nicolas Cage, but it has Nicolas Cage in it. And if you haven't seen it, it's I hadn't seen it until a couple months ago. And I want to say it was probably like a reel or something I saw on Instagram. But there's a scene where they like give Narcan to a dude at a rave or something.
Yeah, they say that'd be banging.
Yeah. exactly. And I just think about that, and I think about these loops that we get into. And now I keep wanting to say the word trap, even though that's the topic we're talking about. But it's a cycle that you get stuck in, and when you're stuck in it, you may not even know you're stuck in it. So it's just interesting to, first recognizing that you're in trouble before even going through it. But yeah, no, I'm excited to talk about the topic. I think it'll be a pretty cool topic.
It's crazy you bring that up. I just started reading that book. Go ahead, Tim. I'm sorry, buddy. I'll cut you off.
No, that's okay. I was just going to say, I think there's an interesting counterpoint to this, though, where you do at some point have to recognize for your own mental health that maybe what you're doing isn't working, and maybe there is a reason for that. So it's finding the balance between being able to push forward continuously and also having the maturity and the experience to say, you know what? What I'm doing is not working for me, and maybe I need to take a step back and reevaluate. And reevaluate does not mean just quit whatever you're doing right away, right? Like, we have to evaluate things scientifically and figure out what's working for us and what isn't and why. And that may involve talking to a therapist, talking to your friends. But it pretty much involves talking to someone, right? Like, we shouldn't make drastic decisions rashly, and we shouldn't make them without really thinking them out and talking them out.
Yeah. It's crazy that you mentioned that, of like taking stock of where you're at. Like, kind of what's the source of this mindset, and maybe going, you know, maybe it's not a patient thing. Maybe it's, you know, like for me recently, I was like, you know, I don't hate the job. I don't hate taking care of people. I love when the radio goes off. I mean, I hate it, 'cause it's like jarring and high squealing and pitchy, and it just does something to my brain, but I love it. I love it when the radio goes off. There's somebody that could use, maybe I could do some good for them that day. But I was not super smitten with the position I was in. So, you know, I recently stepped away from a leadership position just so I could, you know, I was like, I just want to focus on the job. I just want to be the paramedic. I just want to be dad. And, you know, I think it goes back to what you said. And I also want to say that you were kind of getting at it. The first part of this was, there's a difference between, you know, I'm feeling it, I'm going through it right now, which is what we're talking about today, and truly carrying something around, carrying a trauma around, carrying a bad call around. And you definitely need to see a pro for that kind of stuff.
So how do you, I mean, I don't want to get away from the mindset trap discussion, but I don't know. I guess now that I'm thinking about it, it's so easy to just get carried away in like that, the mental health like pit, because I mean, certainly there, you can't have one without the other. I guess what I'm trying to ask is, how do you even get to the point where you're able to reframe those thoughts? You know, how do you even get to that point?
Well, I think a part of it is just this evaluation that we're getting ready to talk about. There's three things that you need to stop and take a look at.
Yeah.
You know, if you're ready to get into it, let's get into it.
Yeah, let's do it.
You know, how do you take back that sense of self, or how do you get back that agency? How can you get to a place where you can even confront your thoughts and reframe them and maybe have a better experience with your job? And I'll say that fully aware that there are some straight up shit companies to work for. I get it. And if you're in one of them, do yourself a favor, find a better one, take a pay cut, do that for you. You know, do what you need to do to get out of that environment. 'Cause the environment that you're in is a big piece of this. So the first, if you want to know where these mindset traps are coming from, or how you're making these agreements, the first thing you should probably look at are the inputs. What are you taking in from the world? I'll use social media as a big, it's kind of a kicking off point, but you know, what are you following? Who are you following? I think a way that you can use, so social media can be a great thing or it could be a terrible thing. It can be crippling you and you may not even know it. I heard a concept, and I think it was maybe it was Bedros, you know, Koulian, who he was like, he's very, very intentional about who he follows. Thousands, millions of people follow him, but he only follows, it was Andy Frisella. And he only follows a few, maybe 100. And I went through last year of, I was like, you know what? I've got a cutoff point. I've got Cody's list of 100 people that he's going to follow and pay attention to. And, you know, if you're feeding me, if I was getting something from you and we could interact, and I felt like I could contact you and we could build some, you know, we could build a relationship, so to speak, as much as you can over social media, then you stayed on the list of 100. But I didn't stay connected to you because we were familiar, because you knew who I was and I knew who you were. So I learned to curate my social media feed with people and pages that I could use on the day to day. So maybe that morning I needed to hear a little Andy Frisella or some Tim Grover or I don't know, John Maxwell or whoever it is that you're listening to, that maybe I can get that mindset going in the right direction instead of, you know, some salty EMS meme of a dumpster on fire with some EMS agency's logo on the side of it going, well, this is my day today. I'm like, God, you know what? That sucks to be you, man. I'd hate to be in that position, but it's funny for a minute. It's funny and it's salty, but it's so damn relatable that you think you're that person too, right? Like, oh man, I'm having a bad time at work and that's my company too. And I'm relatable. And that's, and you just start consuming that kind of, it's like the fast food of social media or the memes, right? The salt dog memes, and it's funny and it's pithy and you're like, hey, got it. I've lived that too, man. But you don't have to embody the discontent of somebody else. You know, let them be them and you do you.
It's funny, you know, you bring that up because when I look at my former coworkers from the agency I just left, literally all I see on social media are the dumpster fire memes, are the drive the ambulance into the Inner Harbor memes, are the, you know, but this is reality, right? Like this is what I have been surrounded with for the past 14 years at work. And how much of that has poisoned my mindset about the place I used to work or about EMS in general, because even when I go on Instagram and I follow other pages for funny stuff, a lot of it is self-deprecating humor about EMS, right? It's about how terrible this job is. It's about how much it sucks to be an EMT or a paramedic. And that's what we see constantly. And guess what? There's a lot of positives to this job. You just have to be able to focus in on those and reframe your mind and find a way to embrace those aspects of the job. Because every time that pager or that radio goes off, we're going to do good. We're going to help somebody. Now, it may not be something that we think in our mind is worthy of our help, but maybe we should humble ourselves a little bit. Maybe we should just take a step back and say, okay, somebody has a situation that they don't know how to deal with, and we need to be able to be the grown-up who walks into that situation and makes that situation better for somebody else, even if it seems kind of ridiculous to us. I will never forget an episode of Cops that I saw when I was growing up where they were interviewing the officer. And one of the things that he was saying, you know, it's this much percent of this, you know, this job is this much percent of this, it's this much percent of that, and it's 80% of being a father or a mother. And that's part of EMS too, is just taking that role and learning how to solve problems for other people that they don't know how to solve for themselves.
Right. Which you can't do if your mind is clouded, if your thought process is I'm actually going to go one step further than my thought processes to kind of tie in what you were talking about. If my belief about what I do is that this job sucks, how can that patient, how can I possibly expect to meet that patient's needs if in fact those needs are merely social, right? They feel like they've got nobody else to turn to. So they picked up a phone and they called 911. You know what? Maybe for no other reason than to just feel like somebody cared about them. And then what do they get? They get, I don't know if this is a real page, we're going to take some heat for it. But if it's dumpster EMS company guy that shows up, what's that individual going to, I called you because I needed to feel human for a minute. You know what I got? An asshole. That's what I got, who treated me like I was beneath them. I don't get it. I don't understand that, but it's so easy. It's even easier nowadays. So when I was riding Instagram, I think it was around, but it wasn't like a thing. It was out there. There was still a lot of Facebook and whatnot, but there was still the funny, you know, the funny meme pages and stuff. And I learned that the mute feature is pretty awesome. Like, I can stay connected to you. I can still support you, but I don't have to see your thing every day. I don't have to see it every day. I'll go back and look at you. If I'm like, oh, you know, if we truly have a connection, I'll go back and check you out and see what's going on with you. But that's just kind of a way that, like, this is your first line of defense for, for burning out, really, is paying attention to what you're consuming. And I pick on social media a lot, but the books that you're reading, the TV shows that you're watching. I mean, if you're watching 911 Lone Star and expecting every day on shift to be a mass cow, I'm sorry, it's not going to happen. Doesn't work out that way, right? But anything that's given you images and words is an input. And that is something that your brain is filing away and saying, this is real or this is not. And it's only real when you say it is. When you classify it as this is reality, you know, your brain doesn't know the difference. It doesn't know the difference between what you tell it is real and what it actually is seeing as real. You got to be careful what you consume. And if it builds and enhances, you know, healthy mindsets and you relate to it on that level, great. Keep it. Put that in your quiver. Put that, you know, that's your first line of defense. You know, the stuff that you're consuming has to be, you have to be intentional. The 9-to-5er that's punching buttons on a keyboard and working spreadsheets all day, they have the luxury of not really having to pay attention to what goes in their brains. Not that they're less capable than we are or anything like that, but we really don't have that luxury. We really don't. We have to be clear-headed and full-hearted when we walk up to somebody's front door. We just have to be.
I think it's interesting when you frame it like that, because it's very easy to poison the well of the mind in terms of putting bad stuff in. And even, I would say, even good stuff, because let's say that you spend all your free time looking at research papers and news about EMS and learning and growing as a EMT or paramedic. Let's say that's what you do. That's fantastic. That's great. Until it's not, right? Because you have to, at some point, take a step back and read a book about something not EMS related. You've got to put on that TV show that's got nothing to do with medicine. You can poison your brain with good stuff as well as bad stuff if you overdose on it, right? I mean,
yeah, you can overtrain it.
You can overtrain it. Yeah. You've got to take time to be a functional, well-rounded human being. You've got to have friends outside of EMS. You've got to have, you know, just people in your life that are just those, right? Like you said, regular 9-to-5 people that aren't constantly putting their hands inside guts and gore that keep you tethered to reality.
Yeah, well, that's a great segue to point number two.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. Perfect segue.
is people, and this one might be a little spicy, but I'm okay with it. Who are you around, and who are you interacting with the most? Right. There's that old phrase that's been out there, and I don't know, it's probably a Dale Carnegie or something like that. You're the average of the five people you spend the most time with. Which is probably more than five people, but it does track to some degree. it does track. I mean, you got to look at your network and look at your inner circle and really ask yourself, you know, look at the individual and go, man, do I really want you to count into my average? You're not passing judgment. I mean, to a degree, I guess you are, but you're looking at this individual and going, is, you know, kind of, you know, just us as men on this podcast, you know, we're looking, we look at each other like, is this the kind of iron that's going to make me sharper? Or is this going to dull my edge to interact with you frequently? That's not to say never talk to these folks or anything like that, but there are folks in the universe and there are folks in your networks that you probably need to limit and be very, very intentional with your time with those folks, because guess what? They're probably suffering from the same burnout and the issues and all the other kind of stuff that you are, and they're not handling it well. And maybe a little distance isn't going to hurt for a little while. And you go do your thing and you come back. You come back to your friends. You now come back to this individual better than you were, so that you can now offer the best version of yourself to them. You know what I mean? Instead of just sitting there commiserating together. You need to distance yourself from the folks that are killing your mindset and aren't supporting you and going, yeah, man, this company sucks. That's not supporting you. That's hurting you. Or, yeah, man, we're so sick of these XYZ drunk overdose, whatever, insert call here. Yeah, man, it sucks. This is not what the job was supposed to be. That's not what I signed up for. Those folks aren't helping you. They're hurting you. You know, and if you don't pay attention, it can kill your... It's not going to just kill your mindset. It's going to kill your career momentum, right? If every time you start to get some motivation and momentum going, and there's those folks right there with the pithy words and the negativity and the, you got to get away from them. They're the crabs in the bucket. You guys ever heard of this? Crabs in the bucket analogy? I think I'm stealing from Andy Frisella again, but you know, there's, if you look at a bunch of crabs in a bucket, there's the one that is close to the top, and right about the time that he's getting right over the top, the ones at the bottom grab his legs and drag him right back down to the bottom. You know, it's like, you, I'm not getting out of here, so you ain't getting out of here either. I hate the job, so you can't love it. You know, that's the worst kind of salt dog there is, right? There's good salt dogs and bad salt dogs, you know, on the job. You have to be intentional with who you are spending true, intimate quality time with. You don't get to pick your partner, but you can limit to some degree the impact that they have on you. I don't know what I'm gonna punt this back to you guys. So you've got that partner on shift that's the crab pulling you down every chance you get. You don't have a choice. You're assigned to that individual by the organization. That's who you got to work with. That's who you got to respond with. What do you do? You're around them for 24 hours. What do you do?
I've been there. I had a partner for about a year and a half who obviously I will not name, but was a very miserable individual. Almost got me in a lot of trouble more than once. One of the only times I've ever gotten in a physical altercation with a patient was possibly because this person ran their mouth. Never had a problem before or since. So what did I do when this person was throwing things and yelling and refusing to do EMT or paramedic things? Well, number one, I did what they were not willing to do. I picked up the equipment they refused to carry. I talked to the patients they refused to talk to. I, you know, did whatever they were not willing to do because the job had to be done. Number one. Number two, I think I really handled it wrong because this person stayed with me, like I said, about a year and a half, and I basically just laid back and took it. I maintained a positive mindset because at the time that's just who I was. And I just kind of took it until eventually they went to a different job because the person couldn't deal with the job anymore. So they left the department. What should I have done? Talk to them straightforward, you know, person to person, and been like, hey, you seem like a miserable son of a bitch. And what can I do to help you? You know, I think that's step one, is just confronting the problem face on. Number two, if you don't get anywhere with that, I think if the problem is serious enough, you need to bring it to the attention of a supervisor. You know, if there's threat to harm the patients, if there's, you know, the job isn't getting done correctly and you can't rein it in yourself, I mean, you have a command structure to fall back on, and that's becomes your supervisor's duty to pick that up and deal with it, I think. But I'm always a face-to-face conversation first kind of guy, you know, just sit down, talk about the issues. Why are you so upset? You know, why are you such a miserable son of a bitch? Like I said, you know,
I think for me, you know, this reminds me of a couple of different times in my career where, I can't help but go back to that section of extreme ownership when they talk about leading up and down the chain of command or leading laterally, right? Mm-hmm. And when you're stuck in a moment where, because it's all often multifaceted. It's not just that you're stuck with a shitty partner. It's maybe leadership knows and is aware of that, right? And that's just, they need to get a truck out the door or they need to get a certain amount of things done. And they know that maybe that person has a terrible mindset, but they know that they will, for whatever reason, come to work and do the job. Not even necessarily, you know, I'm thinking about my experience on a rig, but also in like an office setting, right? So I think that's where you have to, number one, be mindful and deliberate of what the inputs are of your in your head, right? So even if you are immediately surrounded by bad habits, mindfully reviewing which of those traits you like and which of your, those traits you don't like, and making a deliberate effort to not do the things. One of the mistakes that I've made is in an effort to in an effort to do the opposite of what I felt wasn't the right thing to do. So I felt like I was going the right way about doing things. I ended up falling into the same pitfall that I was trying to avoid because I fell into the same traps for lack of a better term of, I don't know, doing the same toxic things that I was experiencing, right? So not only does there have to be that metacognition, a cognition of what you're allowing in and out, but also having the wherewithal, having the insight to regularly check in with yourself to see how you're feeling and what you should or should not be doing. Because once I recognized that, I kind of fell into that same pitfall. It was an eye-opening experience and certainly a life lesson that I hopefully, you know, don't repeat.
So we talk talk a lot about the uber negative guy or gal and how difficult they are to work with. But what about the ones that are, I'm going to coin a new phrase. What about the toxic positivity people? You know, the ones that are, they're Pollyannas, they're nothing can get me down, blah, 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 everything's great, to the degree that they've now sacrificed the professional for that mindset. So you can do that. You can go to either extreme. You can be so negative that you sacrifice your job performance. You could be so positive and upbeat and bubbly and blah, 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 that you forget like, hey, this is fucking real life. Get it together. We've got something to do here. What do you guys think about that? What do you think? How do we deal with those folks?
Yeah. So that's interesting. You bring that up because there are definitely people like that out there. And what occurs to me before I answer your question, I just want to throw this thought out there. What occurs to me when you say that, my first thought is that's a maturity problem, right? Mm-hmm. But then when I think about it, the toxic negative person is also a maturity problem as well, to an extent. So I don't know. It's the same kind of thing. You sit down with them, have a face-to-face conversation and just, you know, come to reality kind of deal. Like, hey, this is, like you said, this is real life. These are actual people we're talking about. These are actual patients. They have families. They have lives. They have You know, everything you have, they have. Mm-hmm. It's not a game, you know, and I think some people have trouble seeing that it's not a game. It's very easy, I think, to mentally separate ourselves from our work, to disassociate to a degree that these don't even feel like real people with real consequences anymore. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think it's very easy to just get outside of that frame of mind and just be like, hey, you know what? Whatever happens, happens. And it doesn't really matter because it's not me. It's not my family. I think that's where some of that comes from. And you have to have some of that on this job in order to survive mentally, right? Like, you cannot take every death personally. You cannot get emotionally involved in each and every one of your patients' lives, because that's not healthy either. You know, that's going to drive you crazy. That's going to lead to severe burnout, depression, anxiety, stuff like that. But I don't know. Maybe I'm being a little bit of a hypocrite, because I can't even think of how many people I've seen die, and it mostly, I haven't turned into a shell of a person. But you can't be totally and completely inhuman about it, right? Especially, you know, like we talked about death notifications a couple episodes ago. Like, you have to remember there's a human element. You can't sell your soul every time that you make a death notification, but you have to keep the human element in there. And you can't just turn around and get on social media and be all like, ooh, I just got another tube on some guy because I have the best job in the world. Well, you know, that guy was a, 80-year-old grandfather with 6 kids and 16 grandkids and, you know, like 8 great-grandchildren. And, like, it was still a person.
You know, sorry,
go ahead, Cody.
Nope, finish up.
I may have gotten us completely off topic. I'm just kind of rambling, but
No. Like, there was an ordinary ops post not too long ago, maybe a couple months ago, where it was one of those just beautiful shots of the bay. They're flying over, and it looks like the coolest job in the world. And the caption was, "This is not the whole story. This is it. It's not the whole story." You know, I agree with you that we have a front row seat to tragedies and unspeakable, awful things, and you do need a defense mechanism for that.
You do.
Do you guys see that when the defense mechanism becomes your entire
personality, aura,
your entire personality, that maybe now it's a little bit unhealthy?
Yeah, and hey, yeah. It's like this, and I'm probably going to trigger somebody out in the audience right now, but it's like when a bunch of firefighters go put out a house fire. And then they all take pictures in front of the burned down house. Like, if that was my house, I'd kick those guys in the genitalia. You know, like, that's not okay. But it's the same kind of toxic positivity. You know, look, what if after cardiac arrest, I got my whole team together and we stood in front of the, guy on the ground in a sheet. And we all took a picture together. Oh, like, what a good job we did. We got the tube. We got the IO. We pushed all the drugs. You know, that's not okay. So why is it okay? You know what I mean? I'd say the cops don't go take pictures with bad guys when they arrest them. But I've seen some stuff like that out there before.
If you could see the visual that I had. That went along with that, Ken. That what if we get ChatGPT to recreate that for me?
The wheels are turning.
I want to go back to the original thing, Cody, that you asked, and that was about how do you deal with that toxic positivity, right? So I think there's a couple things you got to ask first. Number one, where is that quote unquote toxic positivity coming from? Because quite frankly, our own sensors, right, how we're perceiving things aren't unbiased either, right? So what we might be seeing as toxic positivity may just be someone being normal, and our own burnout, our own biases might be contributing to us thinking that they're being toxic, when in reality they may just be normal and we're so burned out we don't see you know, how far we've strayed away. So that's one thing.
Sure. I agree. I think that's a fair criticism. Sure. I guess I could qualify it maybe by saying, like, we're so upbeat, happy, bubbly, and kind of, to use Ken's words, so immature about things that they actually judge you for that. You know, like, you're just this little curmudgeon or whatever. You know, yeah. I don't like you because of that. It's like, well, no, because I know in 15 minutes, we're going to go deal with some life and death shit. And yeah. I need my head in the right place.
Yeah. So that kind of leads into my next thing. Where are they coming at with that? Where are they coming from with that positivity, in the sense that, is that a coping mechanism for them to be able to function? Right. That would be the next thing I would say. And don't get me wrong, I get annoyed as the next person, because when it comes to those, like, hyper bubbly people, because a lot of times in my anecdotal experience, that has been accompanied by such a lack of experience that they say things like, oh, I think trauma's cool. Right. And mm-hmm. and things like that. And, like, whenever someone says that to me, maybe I'm just a little bit.
Maybe you haven't seen, like, enough of it.
Well, right. Just because, I don't know, for me, certain images come to my head and I'm like, you know.
Nothing cool about it.
Yeah. So, but that's where that positivity comes in. But then it's not necessarily. The couple of times that I've responded to this, I've said, hey, that's maybe not the right thing to say. Mm-hmm. And you'll learn that, you know, just try to, like, mm-hmm. coach a newer person into saying, hey, this, and explain to them the why behind it. Right. But I think that those are a couple of methods where you can deal with that toxic positivity. And similar to the toxic negativity, notice that the first thing that I said was not necessarily a offensive tactic, but a mm-hmm. Defensive tactic, right? Let's figure out where we're coming at, make sure that we aren't biased in some sort of way before we start approaching others. I don't know, that
sure
that's helped me before.
Yeah, it's difficult, right, to try to understand or try to figure out why that it's been taken to some extreme, you know. And we all know people who use that big happy personality to cover up a lack of professional competency. And the same with that big negative personality of, like, don't even come at me, bro. You don't know anything about this job. And they're terrible, but they're so awful to deal with that you're just like, I guess I'm going to keep letting you get away with it. And that makes us the bad teammate, right? That we're mm-hmm. avoiding that conflict. And now we're the shithead on the team. You know, oh.
Yeah. Sorry, I just got a lot of gears going in my head. Ken, were you going to say something?
It's deep.
It is deep. No, I didn't have anything specific, but, you know, I think we all can agree. We know people like all of these examples. And I think that Cody brings up a good point that by not addressing these things, we are being bad teammates, right? Like, if we see a problem, we should be the adult in the room who says, okay, there's an issue here. What are we going to do about it? And like I said before, I think the first step is to just sit down and have a conversation with that person and just be like, hey, mm-hmm. you know, Ken to Mustafa, Ken to Cody, you really suck. Okay, maybe not quite like that. But sit down and say, hey, I noticed that ABC, you know, that last trauma we ran together, you seemed like you had a little disorganized assessment. You know, you seemed a little nervous. You seemed a little upset. What's going on? You know, how can I help you? What can we do to make you more efficient? You know, stuff like that. I don't think that the right thing to do is to immediately just pawn it off to a supervisor or something like that, unless there's a threat to patient safety that's imminent, you know. I think we as teammates should be able to sit down with our coworkers and our friends and our you know, fellow volunteers, whatever it is, and be like, hey, I've identified an issue. What do you think? Do you feel like you're struggling in some way? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's take that up. Let's take that to that supervisor level, because that, you know, you can, it's real easy for you to fall. You know, that being a captain, you know, it's super easy to take up the mantle of somebody else's interpersonal nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
And as a leader, if you want to really screw yourself and really expend a lot of leader capital that you can't afford to lose, is take up somebody else's personal crap between two teammates and go, listen, you two are adults, go be adults. I'll sit in the room with you, so make sure you don't kill each other, but I'm not going to address this personality conflict
yep.
between Bobby B and Bobby C. I am not going to do it. Not going to do it. I've done it, and I have totally screwed up and quite frankly ruined a career or two doing that. And it's just leadership immaturity that caused that. But yeah, you as leaders, you have to know to stay detached 1,000% in that situation.
I can't tell you how many times I have had people try to suck me into personality conflict issues, and they try to frame it like it's a workplace issue. Well, yep. EMT so-and-so wouldn't clean
patient safety.
Yeah. EMT so-and-so is refusing to clean the ambulance. Well, paramedic so-and-so is refusing to let me do this skill that's in my scope of practice. Well, EMT so-and-so and paramedic so-and-so disagree on how to treat this patient. So we're going to call you and you're going to tell us if this patient, I actually have a really good case study I need to write up, about one of these situations. I don't know. It could honestly be its own episode. It's pretty in depth. So I don't want to give it away too much right now. But basically the disagreement was over whether or not somebody had capacity, and, they suckered me into it. Rightfully so, because they couldn't determine or agree whether or not this person had capacity. And, the root of it, though, was a personality conflict. The root of the inability to work together. Like, there was a legitimate difficulty in determining if this person had capacity due to complex history, psychiatric issues, stuff like that. But the real root was that they just couldn't get along, and they couldn't even talk about it together. So yeah. They called me out there, and after we handled that, then they had like three more issues with each other they needed me to deal with. And I'm just like, I don't play those games, you know, because if you do, you fall into a trap where, like you said, you're expending your leadership capital, and you're not going to be able to rebuild that. You know, you can't make everybody happy. And if you try to mediate some of these little petty disputes, all you're going to do is upset people. And then you're taking sides and you're the bad guy and you're agreeing with this person, not that person, because of this or that. Then the rumor mill starts and it's just a mess.
And the thing is, Ken, is that, you know, when you go charging into that situation because you're like, okay, now we've got a real problem and I have to get involved, and you go in there, I will say this to every single individual that's not in a leadership position, and every individual that is in a leadership position that's listening to this, hear my words. You have no idea what any individual is carrying around with them on a day-to-day basis. You have no idea what extra baggage they brought to work with them that day, including you as the leader, right? Yep. They don't know what you're carrying around that day. There's people who come to work in the midst of divorce. There's people who come to work in the midst of, you know, I just found out my dad's dying, you know, that kind of stuff. And they're still trying to muscle through it. They're still trying to get through it. And guess what? They're not always going to be the greatest teammate in that situation, but that's what the team is for. is to see that and go, hey, the first stop, the first gate to go through is, what's this cat got? What are they going through? What are they not telling us? And just assume that something's there before we pass a judgment on, like, this is the crab in the bucket.
Right.
And that's why you have to talk to them before questioning up the chain of command. I mean, you have to be able to have that conversation. Now, I will say this. We are taking one thing very much for granted, all three of us, when we're saying that you should have the conversation. And that is, the person that is going to have the conversation has the emotional intelligence to be able to do so. That is not a guarantee, right?
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is, EQ is seen as this static thing sometimes, and I feel like it's not. Like, obviously, this is not my field. I don't know what I don't know. But I feel like your EQ can wax and wane depending on the other stressors in your life, right? So that's why, I don't know, I just keep going back to the first step in any of this, in getting yourself out of a mind trap, is to check yourself first. One of the questions I was going to ask you guys is, what strategies do you have to kind of check in with, to kind of check in with yourself? I'll say that I didn't realize I had a process until I really started working with my therapist a little over a year ago now. And I've learned what, through a lot of hard work, I've learned what my initial symptoms of being, for lack of a better word, triggered are, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I've learned, like, what my mind, like, for example, like, my brain will become defensive and my thoughts will start racing because we call it wargaming, right? So my therapist and I call it wargaming just because of, certain experiences in my past. The way I would respond to it, whether it was as a kid or as an adult, was I would start creating plans, plan A, plan B, plan C, plan D. And in that sudden moment, I've learned to see how I respond, both from a physical sense and a mental sense. So my question for you guys is, number one, what strategies do you guys use to check in with yourself first, right, before going on the not going on the attack? That sounds bad, but yeah, I mean, what strategies do you guys use to check in with yourself before going to a peer and telling them, "Hey, man, it seems like you're a little off today"?
Do you want to go first, Ken?
Sure. It's funny you brought up your therapist, because for me, a lot of what I've learned about how to make sure that I am solid is stuff I got from my therapist, right? So the first thing is that I make sure that I look at myself and I'm calm and I'm being rational. And I don't have any ulterior motives or anything like that, right? I want to make sure I'm coming from a place of honesty, concern, and compassion. I think that's all very important. Then the next thing is, before I ever talk to somebody, I try to understand where they're coming from and make sure that, what they might be thinking and why. And depending on how well I know the person, is going to really make a big difference how far that thought process goes. And then the other thing just flew out of my mind. Oh my God. I just had it there. It was along the same lines. That's what it was. Depending on who the person is going to depend how I talk to them, right? Like, if I know that you're the kind of person that is incentivized by praise and compliments and stuff like that, I'm going to start this off with, "Hey, I think you're an awesome paramedic. I remember that call you told me about last week. It sounds like you did a bang up job. It's just great to have you on this team. But I was wondering if we could talk about that call you just ran an hour ago, because there are some concerns." Whereas if it's somebody who is maybe just driven by, some people just want to have an adult conversation, right? And just be treated as a peer. So I'll say, "Hey man, can we talk about that call that you just ran? Because it sounds like the patient didn't have a good outcome. And I noticed you gave drug X at dose Y, and I'm not sure that was maybe the right thing to do in that particular situation. Can we sit down and look at that?" And some people will respond well to that kind of talk. You know, it just depends on the person. Some people, though, and this is where it gets hard, is when a person has walls up and they're not responsive to any kind of constructive criticism or talking to. And that's when it gets really difficult, because you kind of have two ways to deal with that, right? You can bring out the cannons and tear down those walls and knock them down and march in. Probably not the best way. Or maybe you can get in the moat in your little sailboat and sail around until you find a crack in the walls. And then you can slide in the crack in the walls and start your conversation from there. And that is where it becomes important to know your team, right? Like, as people, as human beings, because that's going to provide you that crack in the walls that you can kind of slide in and be like, hey, you know, that trip you took to wherever looked really nice. Let's talk about it. By the way, can you tell me about this call you just ran? Oh, well, I heard from the hospital that, you know, you gave, you know, drug A, and they had some concerns about that. Can we talk about that? You know, stuff like that. But instead of just jumping in on that topic and hammering them down and hammering those walls down, maybe there's a nicer way to do it. And I don't know. I've had great success with that, the strategy of just approaching people based on how they like to be approached, and not having a blanket statement or entryway to that conversation.
Ken, I got a question for you before Cody goes.
Yeah.
Well, first I want to make a point. I really like what you said about, like, not using the nuclear option, right? Or whatever, however you said it, of like breaking down walls. Cause, certainly if you think about how you want to be approached, if someone was coming at you with guns blazing, you'd be like, fuck you, dude. I don't even care who you are. Like, don't come at me that way. And it ends up creating more problems than solutions. Ken, I want to go back to that first step you said. You said you make sure that you are calm. And you mentioned a couple of other things that I apologize. I'm forgetting the wording. But how do you tangibly do that? Do you like physically ask yourself, am I calm? Because that's what I do. I'm like, okay, where am I at? The first thing that I always realize is, are my thoughts frazzled? Are they racing?
Yeah.
That's what I always like ask myself, like, where am I at? And then I try to actually pause my thinking, which is a lot easier said than done. So kind of want to go back to you real quick. What are your actual questions that you're asking yourself?
Yeah. So, with my laundry list of psychiatric problems and my long time of seeing therapists and psychiatrists and stuff, I have learned how to ask myself these questions. And that's literally what I do. Am I calm? Am I checked into this situation? Am I anxious? Am I angry? If I'm any of these things besides calm and checked into the situation, then I'm going to stop and try to reset. And you can do whatever that is for you, whether it's deep breathing or grounding or just being mindful or whatever it is. But it really is, for me, as simple as asking myself if I'm calm and prepared to have an adult conversation about a hard thing. And what I think people don't realize is, in most of the cases that you have to do this stuff, you can take a couple minutes to get your mind in the game. You do not need to immediately jump in the truck, race out to wherever this other person is, and nail them to the floor, right? Like, take a couple minutes to process. Okay, I just got a call from, you know, Hospital X that one of my paramedics just gave a drug at the wrong dose for the wrong indication, and the patient's not doing well now. Not saying this has ever happened, but if it did, this is how I would handle it. So the first thing I would do is just process it. Just take a couple minutes. Whether I get in the truck now or in 10 minutes will not change anything with what's happening with the patient. It's not going to change anything that happens to that paramedic. It's just going to be a 10 minutes of me collecting myself, thinking about everything involved in the situation. Why might they have done something like that? ask them is the answer. It doesn't matter what you think is why. Ask them, why did you do that? Take a look at, your thought process, and just make sure it's clear and it's straightforward and you're not making assumptions. And, again, I feel like I've gone off track here, but, basically, yes, I ask myself if I'm calm.
No, I appreciate that. Thank you. One other thing that my therapist told me that when she first told me, I thought it was the stupidest thing. It was like the most woo thing in the world, but I tell you what, she's got something to it. She would ask me, like, if I was ever stressed, she would ask me, where do you feel it? And I'm like, what does that even mean? Like,
your body?
Do I feel it in my ass? Like, what are you asking me?
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, man, she's onto something, because I find that a lot of times, like, I, like, scrunch up my shoulders, or, like, I stiffen out my back or whatever. And then I'll notice that once I notice that, I'll try to be deliberate about just, like, relaxing my shoulders and stuff like that. And I'll tell you the effect that it has on your mindset before you go into a tough conversation is amazing. It's amazing. So I feel like I've taken away from Cody's time. Sorry about that. Go ahead, Cody.
My mind's not all that different from Ken's. You know how they and I forget who put it out there, but there's the HALT assessment for your, like, your performance. It's, are you hungry, angry, lonely, or tired? So I'm going to hit that first. I'm going to assess myself and go, all right, am I hungry? Probably need to eat something, because I don't want to go hangry into this match, or get hangry in the middle of it. Right? I said a match. I mean, this confrontation, this conflict that we're about to go into. If I'm angry, I am definitely going to give it a day. I realize that anger is, especially mine, can be difficult to deal with. It's not difficult to control. I've never, like, knocked anybody out at work or anything like that, but it's difficult to communicate with me when I'm in that state. Lonely, you know, when was the last time I was just, like, friendly with somebody? When was the last time that, you know, I was just, like, trying to be cool with somebody? Am I feeling a certain way because I'm feeling a certain way? Kind of mindset. And then finally tired. If it's 2 o'clock in the morning and we just butted heads on a flight or on a call somewhere, we're not going to talk about it. We're going to bed. I'm sorry. We will go to bed angry, except for me and my wife. I won't do that. I won't go to bed angry, but me and my partners will go to bed angry, and we'll deal with it in the morning. You know, if you can sleep on it, you wake up the next morning and go, see you next shift, and it's over. I think you need to triage, which conflicts are the ones that you're going to stay 2 hours late for, and which ones you're going to, you know, you're going to move on with. But yeah, if you're hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, don't engage. Get yourself together first and bring your best self to that conflict in the pursuit of the best possible solution. Otherwise, man, it can derail pretty quick, and it usually derails pretty ugly.
Where were we in terms of the input, people, actions?
We're at actions now.
Okay, good. Because I'm not going to lie, I definitely lost track that we were even talking about.
You know, it all kind of intertwines together. So when we're looking at the reasons that we're burned out, or why maybe not loving the job, or feeling like the job isn't loving us right now, take a look at what you are doing. What are you doing? Day in, day out, what are you doing in pursuit of your physical, mental, and spiritual health? Because if you don't have those things squared away, there are no amount of pizza parties and hot dogs and barbecues and special pink t-shirts and whatever month we do that. And October, right? October? No offense to anyone. October. You know, there's no amount of the trinkets and the quote-unquote little things that are going to make you love the job all of a sudden. If you are not taking care of you, and you are not taking care of your physical, mental, and spiritual health, you know, if you're doing nothing in healthy in any way, you're sleeping, scrolling, and eating your way through your day or through your shift, you need to get a hold of it and start taking some deliberate actions toward improving your health in those arenas. Because while you're sitting there ruminating on all the terrible things about your company that make you hate it, or that patient or that call or whatever it is that's just got your mind racing and got your mind going in the wrong direction. Give your brain and body something to do. These guys I'm in love with on Instagram right now, it's DJ Shipley, and they do this, these 20-minute recovery walks, and it is a game changer. Get up and get moving, you know, for 20 minutes, just go walk, go move, or walk and talk with someone. I remember, I was in a position where, I was a director of a department, and if I was going to have a tough conversation with somebody, I needed to have one-on-one. We went for a walk. We were in this huge, warehouse space with tons of hallways, and there was miles and miles of corridor, and you could actually get through a lot of business, and the confrontation and the conflict was less severe than, it would have been had we been sitting across a desk from each other. And there was somebody, was it Jobs? Maybe, maybe it was Steve Jobs that would, they never did a meeting sitting behind a desk. He never had a one-on-one conversation with one of his folks, you know, sitting behind a desk. They always walked, they were always moving. So anyway, I'm kind of going off on a little rabbit trail there, but, deliberate action for your physical health is kind of a no-brainer, right? Just do something. You don't have to wake up at 4:30 in the morning and do Olympic lifts and keep up with Jocko or run a marathon every day or something like that. But you need to do something for yourself, because the mental health follows the physical health. I fell into a trap of working on the craft, master the craft, working, sharpening that razor's edge. And that was really the only thing that I was doing, other than, you know, kind of some BS workouts that weren't really contributing to my health at all. That's all I was doing. That's all it was to contribute to myself. And it wasn't really balanced all that well. And I didn't get a lot of it. I got a lot of it at first, but then I burned out on that. Then you burn out on the next thing, and then you burn out on the next thing, and the next thing, and the next thing. So be careful not to obsess on one thing. Do what you need to do to take care of your body with the right balance of intake and output. That's what I would say. You know, if today you want to go to this, steak in Maine right here where I live, and you want to get that burger, get the burger. If it's going to make you feel good. Don't sit there and agonize over the decision and go, oh my gosh, I can't eat this. You know, that's not the right balance. That's not the right mindset or right relationship to have, in that situation. I say that to say this, I am not talking about body image and physique and all that kind of stuff. I'm talking about taking care of your physical health, because your mental health is at stake. If your physical health is off, you know, how are you recovering your mind from the stresses of life? So let's play this out. Like, let's go back to what we were just talking about. We had a week of dealing with some conflicts and dealing with some issues. And we decided that this was going to be the week that we went to work and we talked it out with everybody. And there's an allostatic load that comes with that. You're absorbing their emotions. You're giving yours away to them, and, you know, vice versa. How are you recovering your mind from that? Scrolling social media is not going to do it. That's not going to help you. This is going to create more anxiety. You know, so we have to be, again, deliberate about it. Do you need to go sit in a cold tub and meditate for 5 minutes while you freeze your ass off? I don't know. Maybe that works for you, if that's going to get it done. I would say, and I would caution folks to stay away from social media for that kind of stuff. The pop psychology on social media is not going to help you. It is not going to fix you. As a matter of fact, what it does is it creates, not all of those people are psychology experts. Not all of those people are experts on trauma. Some of these folks may have experienced some and think they know what they're talking about. And so they put it out there. So then what do? You're scrolling and you go, hey, check, check. Oh, got that too. Check, check. I have all five things that they were just talking about. Now I have trauma. That's not how it works. That's not how it works. You're choosing it. You're choosing it. That's probably going to be a hot take. We're probably going to get some heat for that. But there is a Give me 2 seconds. There was a fantastic podcast I listened to on this very thing a few days ago. It is the Modern Wisdom Podcast, and it was episode 725. It's the problem with taking therapy advice from Instagram. This is the name of the episode. And she is an actual clinical psychologist who unpacks the reasons and all of the issues that that come along with taking all of your psychology advice from Instagram. Sometimes it's well-intended, but just know that Instagram is designed to get you to come back and look at the next thing that they're doing. Mm-hmm. It's not designed to help you. So if you identify with that page and say, oh, they found my trauma, they found my issue, they found what's wrong with me, and I keep coming back and I keep giving them views and I keep coming back and keep giving them views, you probably can get something. This is my experience. When I followed a page like that, I got about a week's worth of good stuff from it. And then it was, hey, this is what I fed my dog today. And I'm like, okay, you got me. You hooked me and you got me in the boat. And then you threw me back. Yeah. That sucks.
I love this, Cody, because one of the first things that came to mind. So what I was going to do, I was going to say some real quick, and then we can just summarize the episode because I know we're coming up on time. So folks should really check out the Center for Humane Technology. They're the folks behind the documentary Social Dilemma, an eye-opening documentary and project that goes into the inner workings of our social media experience. And how certainly we are the commodity here, right? We as the users are the commodity here, and our information is the commodity. And that really gave me an understanding of why I was getting pulled. So a little thing that I did was I turned off all my social media notifications. I do have them on my phone, but when I have to physically go in and check them out, just because I saw that I was getting that dopamine kick from looking at my phone, seeing if I was seeing anything. Going back to your, you said your latest, that last hot take, I wouldn't say it's a hot take at all, because you're saying that you should be getting your psychological advice and direction from licensed clinicians, not Instagram. Yeah. You said that we shouldn't be getting psychological advice from Instagram. I would say that you shouldn't be getting any advice from Instagram. I don't care. I mean, sure, there's a ton of good resources, but certainly even our own content, folks that are listening to our content, I would encourage each of you to not just take our word for it, right? I don't think anyone on the Alert Medic One project says, hey, what we're saying is 1,000% the truth. What we're saying is, hey, we're 4 professionals in the EMS field that have a variety of different experiences that are providing our take on things. But that does not absolve you from your responsibility as a listener and an advocate and a clinician to go do your own work. And certainly that comes into play when we're talking about, of all things, psychiatric advice on Instagram. I mean, trust me, I've seen the influencers too. It is not the place to get the information you're looking for.
Yeah, maybe your first instinct after going, oh man, I experience all 5 of those things in that video, it shouldn't be to click follow. It should be to find a professional to go, hey, this is going to sound weird, but I was on Instagram the other day, and there's these 5 symptoms. It's become the WebMD of the psychology world, right? So I saw these 5 symptoms, and I need to come talk to a professional. I think that is safer than solely relying on this page or that page for your psychiatric help, because you know, as we all know, and as a lot of folks that are listening knows, that you can never substitute, no matter what state of mental health you're in, you cannot substitute the impact that a trained professional can have on your day-to-day game and helping you unpack. That's what Instagram doesn't do. It doesn't get you inside your own head and help you pull apart each little thread and each little string of why I feel that, and connect it back to these other experiences, and then process those things appropriately. I mean, there's a lot of them that give you a bunch of good tools, like journaling and all this kind of stuff, but it you have to do more than that, which kind of brings me to the last point in this, is that's the spiritual health part of it. And I'm not talking about you know, going to church or anything like that. But it's more about where do you go to feed, what can you do to feed your soul? You know, 8 o'clock at night in my living room with my whole family in the room, including the dog taking up room on the couch. Man, that does more for my soul than a church ever did. You know, it does more to feed me because it helps me remember and grounds me back. I guess that's the right way to think. Your spiritual health is what grounds you before you go back into the fray for 24 hours tomorrow. You know, a dude night around a fire with a little bit of bourbon, not a lot, a little bit at a time. And not a lot of words is wonderful. It's great. It is the most awesome thing in the world to feed your soul, because it lets you know, kind of like back to what you were talking about, Ken, of being around folks that aren't in the business. So you don't have to keep staying in that space in your mind all the time, you know, find two or three friends that, I don't know, work for Amtrak or something that don't have a clue what you do. And you're like, you know, I really don't want to talk about it. So let's talk about something else. And you got to have something more going for you than the job. So I have been a staunch opponent of getting involved in, or even listening to, the talking heads on ESPN and all that stuff. But outside of being a paramedic, I didn't have a lot to talk to people about. And you'd be amazed, being just mildly conversational in sports, how many just mindless conversations with folks to build a connection you can have. You know, and it doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be sports. It could be
politics. You can always talk about politics.
You know, there are two things that you can get a really good fight started over, and that's politics and talking about the Dallas Cowboys in an open forum. But pretty good fight started going with both of those, which won't do wonders for your spiritual health either, except watching the Cowboys lose.
So I would just throw out a counterpoint or a challenge to one thing you said a couple minutes ago, Cody. You mentioned that your physical health leads your mental health, but I would say your mental health can also lead your physical health, because when I was 25 years old, I was in the best physical condition I ever was. And then I just in the throes of mental illness, became an alcoholic, got real fat, got in terrible physical shape, and my body is just trashed now. And I'm working to rebuild it. I'm eating better. I keep saying I'm joining a gym. I haven't done it yet. But my mental health trashed my physical health. And it's very unfortunate. But I think it does go both ways.
It's a symbiotic relationship.
Yeah.
Right. For one to be great, the other one, you know, kind of has to be there too. You know, if you're, I agree. That's fair criticism. Thanks for pointing that out too. Because yeah, if you don't even feel like getting out of bed, you're not going to the gym. And I make a monthly donation to Planet Fitness and I never go.
Yeah.
I was pretty religious there for a little while, and then my buddy dropped off, and now I'm back to working out in the hangar prison gym. So
I want to this whole conversation reminded me of something pretty remarkable that I hold near and dear to my heart. It's a quote. It's a story from The West Wing. I don't know if you guys have seen The West Wing. And it has to do with I think it really drives home the point of going and talking to your friend who you think is in trouble, right? Mm-hmm. And the story goes like this, if you guys don't mind humoring me for a second. So there's a guy that's walking down the street when he falls in a hole. The walls are so steep he can't get out. A doctor passes by, and the guy shouts up, "Hey, you, can you help me out?" The doctor writes a prescription, throws it down in the hole, and moves on. Then a priest comes along, and the guy shouts up, "Father, I'm down in this hole. Can you help me out?" The priest writes out a prayer, throws it down in the hole, and moves on. Then a friend walks by. "Hey, Joe, it's me. Can you help me out?" And the friend jumps in the hole with him. Our guy says, "Are you stupid? Now we're both down here." The friend says, "Yeah, but I've been down here before and I know the way out."
Mm.
That story has always stuck with me ever since I saw it. Credit to my wife for getting me in the West Wing, for the importance of like the peer-to-peer connections. And that initial part of what Ken was saying was go talk to your colleagues, right? Go talk to the folks that are doing the work next to you. Because it's, I mean, I've been there both on, I like to think I've been there as the friend, but I've also been the guy in the hole plenty of times. And I don't know, it's one person reaching out and asking you something. It works wonders, and you can't overstate the importance of that. So I just want to, just for our listeners, summarize at least what I got out of this conversation, Cody. And it goes back to folks that are in, you know, whether it's you, whether it's someone else, you may be in a bad state of mind for whatever reason. And Cody, today's conversation, I feel like was a methodology to kind of get back, in your words, get your get back your agency, right? You said get your get back your sense of self and control, and try to reframe your thoughts that you know, maybe you can have a better experience with what, not only what you do every day, but your life as a whole. And you provided kind of a three-step approach, right? First, evaluate all the inputs that are coming into your cognition, all the inputs that are coming into your life, whether it's social media or anything like that. First, you evaluate that. Then you evaluate the people in your life, the folks in your immediate circle, and how they're affecting your life. And finally, evaluate your own actions, what you're doing, you know, what your habits are, what your regular tendencies are. And with the evaluation of those three things, you end up having the ability to really give yourself an honest check-in of where you're standing and where you can go. Was that a good summary of today's episode?
Yeah. You get a great assessment of where you are, but what you should also walk away from that with is, you know, you said it right. This is about assessing why you don't feel like you have a sense of control by assessing the things that you have 100% control over. And why don't I have control over my inputs? Well, just take it. The people in my life aren't working out for me. Take control of the people that are for your interactions, you know, and then take control of the actions that are hopefully things that you can do that will enhance your life and enhance your health and enhance your sense of self and sense of agency.
And we're certainly not saying it happens easily. Sorry, I don't mean to cut you off. I don't want to say is I don't want to come off as condescending either. We recognize, trust me, we recognize the difficulties that go along with addiction. I think each of us have experienced that in our own way. I think we understand the difficulties. What I would say, though, is one victory a day is enough. Whatever minor victory there is, that's okay, because you're moving in the right direction. Sorry, Cody, I cut you off, buddy, but I just wanted to stress that.
Yeah. No, but you cut me off with something great that allows me to tie back into your story we're three dudes, but we've been in the hole too.
Yeah. Yeah. Ken, do you have anything, bud?
No, I think that was a wonderful episode. So thank you, Cody, for the idea here.
Sure. Stay tuned for part two. We're going to talk about three actual specific mindsets or things that you say to yourself that might be robbing you of your job satisfaction or love of the job, and maybe some ways that we can hope, at least some ways that I have reframed those agreements and to with varying degrees of success. But just because it didn't work for me, don't mean it won't work for you.
Ken, you want to close this out, buddy?
Sure. Thank you, everybody, for listening to the Alert Medic One podcast. Please find us on social media. We're everywhere. Leave us a like, a rating, a review on the podcast app of your choice. Wherever you are, whenever you are, anywhere in the galaxy, please take a minute to listen to us. And thank you for listening to the Alert Medic One podcast.